Okay, so tonight's chapter again is a Limud HaMusar, the study of Musar. And he's going to give us two, and the way that I understand this, basically, we're going to learn two distinct concepts that we will develop. So he starts with the Rambam. The Rambam, this is a small passage from the Rambam's Shmona Prakam, which was his introduction to Pirkei Avos. He wrote a sort of introduction which discusses many, many things that are unrelated to Pirkei Avos, which is a concept of Torah. The Rambam writes as follows. So, Adam HaSholem, the whole, complete, the perfect person, that which we are all striving to achieve. Tzorech lo sheyazkir midosav tamid. Beautiful phrase. Must, he's tzorech lo sheyizkor. Literally is a language of to remember or to keep in his mind. Midosav. His midos, his traits, his characteristics, his personality, his developing tamid. What's the word tamid mean?
Continuously,
always. So the Adam HaSholem, says the Rambam, what does he need to do? What is a defining characteristic of an Adam HaSholem? Somebody who is constantly and always keeping his midos in his mind. He's remembering them, he's thinking about them, he's working on them. The Yishko Pu'ulosov, and he should weigh his actions. The Yivkon Tchunos Nafsho, and measure his inner personality, his Tchunos Nafsho, the nature of his being. Yom Yom. Better than all the time?
Every day.
Daily, yeah. Yom Yom is a word which he's going to focus on, specifically that phrase, the concept of daily. He has a daily regimen of paying attention to himself, of working on himself. And as Rambam writes, as a person sees himself beginning to lean a little bit to this side, he'll quickly correct himself. He'll not allow himself to become ingrained or embedded in this sort of behavior. He pays attention, and when he sees himself beginning to falter, so he quickly straightens himself. I always think about driving in a car. Most of our alignments are not exactly perfect, and if we let go of the wheel, so what happens invariably to our cars, which are not perfect? It begins to veer a little bit, which is fine if you're paying attention and you make the slight correction. So what do we need to do if you want to drive and you want to stay in a straight line? You must keep your hands on the wheel always, because the car itself or the road itself is not perfectly straight. So it's not difficult when you're in the middle of the lane to stay in the middle of the lane. It actually takes almost very little effort. With a finger, you can direct the wheel to stay in the middle of a lane on a highway. And making a turn requires effort. Just if you're going to have... No. But if you don't put that finger there, within seconds, you'll be, you know, five lanes off to the side, crashing into a tree. So I like that little parable of going through life. If you pay attention always, and you're constantly making slight variations, small adjustments, correcting yourself here, you can keep yourself on the straight and narrow. But if you ever take your foot, your finger off of that wheel, it won't take long. All of our alignments are a little bit off. We're not naturally perfect in our ability to do that, and we veer. We get a little bit angry, we get a little bit haughty, we forget about that. That hasn't happened. So you gotta keep yourself straight. Says the Rambam, the other Mashalim is somebody who's constantly paying attention to that, always making those variations, the adjustments necessary to maintain himself where he wants to be. Says Rav Olba, second paragraph. Yisoid ha-chinuch ha-musar. Yisoid, the fundamental aspect of chinuch in Musar, of educating ourselves, of preparing ourselves for what it means to study Musar. It's not listening to shmuzin and reading holy books and paying attention to these mind-opening concepts. That's not what it's about. You want to do Musar? All those things are nice. That's not the yisod of chinuch to Musar. That's not the foundation of the fundamental elements to learning Musar. What is? Kvius yom yomis. Having a set daily time, ham yuedis, which is designated with chontchunos nafsho yom yom. To pay attention to your inner workings every day. That's the yisod. That's the fundamental thing that I have a time for it. He writes, ayidei limud sifrei Musar v'ratzifos, learning it consistently, v'iyun in depth, and with chazara, review. All of those things are critical, but what the critical element of those things are is that you have a specific time every day that you're doing it. All that we write, she says, about the ideas about Musar are all parpros, they're all flowery extras to the fundamental point of Hachiyuv lehakdish yom yom zman lelimun Musar v'cheshbon nefesh. The chiyuv, the obligation to sanctify, this is a word that he used, a time, a specific time every day for the study of Musar, and the cheshbon hanefesh, the looking into oneself and paying attention to where he is holding in life. He writes, this has been what all these svarim actually teach. This is their thing that they say is what's necessary. And all of the Roshi Yeshivas of the later generation have all focused on this thing of having a set Musar Seder. One of the advantages of learning in Yeshiva, should you have the opportunity to do, so there's a Musar Seder in Yeshiva. There's a time where you learn Musar. Every day, a set time, you did it in the Birchas HaTorah, 9 o'clock to 9:20, you're learning Musar. Yisrael, right after Mincha. You had morning Seder, Shir, a break. Everybody gathered for Mincha at 2:30. 2:45 to 3:15 is Musar Seder. And that's what you're supposed to be doing. There's a set time every day in which a person had Musar Seder. What you wanted to do during that time was obviously up to you, but that was the set time for what it was for. It is well known from experience, Shahakam, in the third paragraph, Shahakoveya Zman Leliman Musar Yom Yom, somebody who sets aside time to learn Musar every day, Mishtana Hu Latova Midli Shiyir Yirgish Bekach, will change for the benefits without noticing it. You won't even notice it. Behan Haguso in his behavior, his Hiruso, and how careful he is and not to violate certain things, not to offend certain people, both in between man and man and God. And his desire, his yearning for levels of learning in Torah and in Avodah. So those three areas, he says, you will be changed. You will not notice it, but it will be there in those three areas. A, in your sensitivity, in your behavior, and in your drive and desire to achieve greatness in Torah. Where does all of that come from? So people make the mistake. They think, I need to hear a shmooz. I need to go to the tape library. I need to download something from the internet. I need to hear something that's going to inspire me. That's very nice, but that's not how it works. The way that it works is through consistency, is through work, having a specific time every day, and the svarim all write that it does not need to be a long time. It could literally be 5 minutes. But that there is a point in time, a consistent point in time, the same 5 minutes every day, that I designate and I work on something and I have a plan as to how I'm working on it. And through that, I will achieve all of these things. See, quotes from Yisrael Salanter. And Yisrael Salanter, the founder of the entire Muslim movements, he writes... The quotation there in the bottom of the page, towards the bottom, Al yipol leif ha'odom delimudo musar ve'einenu mispoel. Sometimes what happens is a person does this, he has a musar seder, he doesn't feel anything, he doesn't really think that anything is happening, he doesn't notice any quick difference. He's like, I've done this for a whole week already, Rabbi, I've been sitting and learning musar, and you know, I'm not really noticing that I'm any different, I'm not any better a person. Says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, do not let your heart sink, is his language. A person should sit and learn Musar, and he's not feeling anything. Ein roshi menashe, he doesn't notice an imprint into his soul, l'shanos darko, to change his ways. Says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, Yoda ne'emana, know for sure, it is a trustworthy source. Im kilo yigala le'ene basar haroshi, whether or not your physical eyes cannot see the difference, ene haseichel rose, but your spiritual, intellectual eyes see. Like playing off the terms that we discussed in the previous weeks, things that are seen, things that are not seen. You might not see the difference, but know, he writes, that it's there. The Rabbu Sa'itim, over the course, the passage of time, the Ribui Halimut, over the course of all of your learnings, Miskapsos HaRashimos HaNe'alamos. All of those hidden impacts, all of the impressions that are made on a person, each one is small, but they build, and they build, and they make a difference, and it has an impact, and the Odom Acher Yehafech. So that is, with all growth, you look at a plant every day, you'll never notice a change. Now, you look at a child, you'll never notice a difference. And then all of a sudden you go away for 2 weeks and you look back, and when did that happen?
All growth is like that. And we know it. We've experienced it. We've seen it. Yet we don't believe it in ourselves when it comes to our own spiritual growth. So that if we don't make these major strides, we give up hope right away. In reality, the measure of our growth is in the same way as it is in a child, a woman who's expecting. And, you know, she herself doesn't ever see herself growing. But then a friend comes by after a month, and they notice. And with a child, with all planned life, it's the same thing with everything. You don't have to bring thousands of examples. So the Liman HaMusar is the same thing. A person who's learning Musar every day, 5 minutes, he designates, sets aside a time. So he's not going to notice the next day that he's a better person. He's not going to notice 3 days later, 5 days later. But someone else will notice. Someone else will see, you know, like after all the time, each day a little impact takes place. Says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, that's how Liman HaMusar, that's how it works. That's what has to happen through the passage of time. Things take place. Hanisoyon Yoid Bahashkafakala, simple view will see that experience will prove it. And the experience will testify Al Haloy Main Musar in Ma'atvim Harbe. If you learn whether or not you're learning a little bit or a lot, will raise himself in his ideas, the way that he thinks, in his behavior, it will happen. What's the key? Consistency, setting aside time, and allowing it to have its impact. That's point number one of his introduction. What the idea behind Liman Musar is, the idea of setting aside time, allowing that time to be kadosh, sanctified. It's a holy time. This is the time that I'm going to designate for Musar, and being able to learn while a person is doing that. Okay, phase two is going to be an introduction as to what are we trying to accomplish. Okay, so now I have my Seder, which we will have by the end of this night. Guaranteed, we will have a specific time that we will be setting aside. It's not obviously going to be all three of us going to be the same time. It seems to be a time. Excuse me. What are we working on while we are engaged in the study of Musar? So he writes as follows. This is the second, the last paragraph, last full paragraph on the page. There's a term. There's a term which he's going to introduce, which again we're going to spend much more time talking about. We're going to introduce it here, called his boninus. His boninus, which means to be lehit bonein, means to contemplate, in the most basic English translation, to contemplate, to look into, to think about, to pay attention, to be aware of, just simply that idea of not living on autopilot, but being familiar, paying attention to that which is going on around you, is the basic concept of his boninus. This is going to be a major concept that he's going to work into all of his work. I'll tell you just today, I'm reading this fascinating book. I just picked it up a week or so ago. It's called The Talent is Overrated. It's a great book. Jeff, I forget the guy's last name. Right? He's writing a book in which he's debunking those who believe that that which creates a great performer, whether that's in the world of music, or in the world of literature, in the world of sports, in the world of business, is innate, inborn talents. He's a talented person. He's got talent. He's got natural talent. Mozart. I'll never have talent like Mozart. I'll never be as talented as Tiger Woods. Debunking that thing is totally not true. The difference which distinguishes world-class performers from everybody else is their ability to create a practice routine in which they are constantly developing and working on their skill and fixing the areas of themselves that are not perfect. And with I've got a phrase which I'm blanking on right now. Not called productive practice, but whatever it is, a specific type of practice, which directed practice, which allows you to develop that. And anyone who's willing to put in the time and the effort, world-class athletes, world-class musicians, it's a tremendous amount, years, a decade worth of effort, will be able to produce that. It's very interesting. One of the examples that he brings, which is not an example to that particular point, but it's a different point, is from Tiger Woods, who, by the way, he writes both on Mozart and Tiger Woods. The people are their classic examples of people with natural inborn talent. Both of them had fathers who were professional instructors in the field that they excelled in. Tiger Woods' father was a golf instructor, an avid, passionate golf person who had him learning golf strokes before he knew how to walk. And Mozart's father was a professor of music as well, who's teaching him from the time that he was 3 or 4 also. Their first major work, Tiger's first major victory in world-class competition, was when he was in his upper teens. As was Mozart's first composition that was considered a real classic was when he was also 17 to 20 years old, which is after 10 years of intensive study on both of their parts. Those little known facts on both of them didn't happen overnight. They intensively studied practice and work for a decade before either one of them did anything of note. But he mentioned about Tiger Woods, that's just totally parenthetical. It's an interesting book, I highly recommend it. So he says, those of you who are students of Tiger Woods will notice that very often during a tournament, or often it will happen, that he'll line up for a shot, begin his swing, and then a major distraction will occur. Either a fan will yell, or the galley from another hole will erupt in applause, or you know, something will happen which he loses concentration. And in mid-swing, he'll stop, take a step back, recomposure himself, and approach the ball and swing again. You're right, other golfers are in awe of that because most of the time, once they've already begun the swing, they can't stop it. And the fact that they've now been distracted, they're just going to, you know, it's too late. The process has been put in motion, and it's just going to continue on once it's been put into motion. So this author writes, the significance of that is as follows. When you learn to drive a car, so if you can remember that experience, you can remember how much mental energy went into learning how to drive a car. You are focused. Check my mirror, check the rear view mirror, check my side of the mirror, check my speed, make sure which way am I singling, up is this way, down is this way, which way am I turning, where are the other cars around me, where am I going. You're mentally very present to when you drive. The second stage we get into is which we integrate all the information into a seamless whole. And then the third stage, which all of us are in at this point, is just an autopilot. We rarely think when we drive. And that's not a bad thing. As long as you've gotten to the point where you're a good enough, safe driver, it frees us to do other things that we need to do while we're driving, whether that's talking on the phone, listening to the radio, listening to a share. But we are no longer encumbered by the act of driving a car. We have mastered it to the point where in our daily activities we really don't need to pay attention. You'll always notice, people like to give this example, if you're listening to the radio while you're driving or talking on the phone and something happens, there's an accident or you need to avoid something, you will rezone into the driving and you'll tune out whatever it was that you were doing before. And then when things come down, all of a sudden you'll remember almost, wait a minute, I was having a conversation or I was listening to the program and you've totally lost what was going on, because when you were in autopilot, you had freed your mental capacity to pay attention to something else, and when you needed to be shifted back in, that's the complaint people have, people talking on the phone or listening to the radio at the same time while they're driving. Too much mental capacity is taken on the other things, and you haven't even left enough to be a safe driver anymore, and you're not noticing enough because you're too distracted. Separate discussion. The point is, you basically drive on autopilot. Many of us make the mistake to think that in our professions, in our careers, and the things that we're working towards, he writes, the goal is to get so proficient at it that you could do it on autopilot. So he writes, that's exactly the opposite, and it's entirely wrong. When you're focusing on autopilot, you'll never get better. You're just cruising at whatever level you think you can get. What separates Tiger Woods from everybody else is that on any given shot, on any given tournament, he is still never focusing or functioning on autopilot. And if something happens to distract him, it's not, well, let me just carry this through the way that I've practiced it 10,000 times. I'm going to stop, regain myself, concentrate, and do this as if this is the only shot in the tournament that matters. Never to focus on autopilot is really, when you're trying to achieve something, what you want. When we drive, which we're not really trying to accomplish anything, we slide into that. This is, you often let yourself in your work life or in other areas, you just sort of slide right into autopilot, which is the exact opposite of what the greats are doing. They're never allowing themselves to slip into autopilot. Everything they're doing is with concentration, with improvement. What can I do better? How can I make this work? Just today I read that. That is exactly what Volvo says. As a Jew, living life is about that. slip right into autopilot. Even on good days. So now I'm in a routine. Now I daven shacharis. I got a mincha. I put on my tefillin. I wear my tzitzis. It's totally an autopilot. There's nothing going on. This is exactly where we start with introduction. There's nothing going on there. It's just cruising. It's like driving. Well, if you max out where you've now just autopiloted your life, well, you're not really going to be accomplishing anything. And this world, which has so much to do, very often for someone who didn't grow up observant, getting to the point of observance was such a mountain, you can't even imagine ever doing it on autopilot. I got this question from somebody once. Somebody who was not yet fully observant, pretty close, had come a long way with a reform background, said to me at my Shabbos table once, "Rabbi, I don't understand. When I hear a talk about growth or improvement, I hear it. There are so many things that I can think of. I'm not great at wearing my tzitzis all the time. I'm better with my tefillin 3 times a day. You know, I'm not quite there as far as my davening. There are like lots of things that I still need to be doing, so I need to take on. But I don't understand." He said to me with total seriousness, "What do you like have to work on? I don't get it." He says, "Like, you're doing everything already. Like, you know, you're davening and you're wearing your tzitzis and you're tefillin and you're making brachos. You don't forget. Like, what do you have to work on?" And he didn't get it. Now, I understand that. Because the first plateau is just doing all the stuff. So when you're still on towards the bottom of that mountain and you're looking up at all of the stuff that you got to do, and it's a whole lot of stuff, you can't even imagine, like, well, once I get to the top of the mountain, like, well, what do you do once you're there? Like, now what? And I get it. Once you're there, so now's where you start. Great. Now I'm doing all the right things. Is the point to live your life on autopilot? That's not at all what it's about. It's all about what we've been studying for the past couple of weeks of infusing the daily actions with depth, with meaning, with understanding, not being on autopilot. Tiger Woods still practices because there's always what to get better. Is our life any less significant than Tiger Woods hitting a golf ball? Of course not. Of course, I don't know if that came up right. Whatever it was. Of course it is more significant. That's the idea of his bonus. I am not going to live my life on autopilot. I'm going to be aware of what is going on around me. There's going to be a period of musr every day, because if there's no musr, I'm living on autopilot. I'm not working on myself. I'm not taking time out to stop and to think and to contemplate what's going on. What did I do well today? What didn't I do well today? What could be done better? What needs work? And his bodhinus is the concept which is going to introduce this phrase of contemplating and being aware, which is going to be this idea of not living on autopilot, basically. That's not his terminology, it's my terminology, borrowing from that, but working on oneself, constantly improving and getting better in the things that we do. Let's see his words as he describes this idea. So it says on the last full paragraph on the page that we started. Lo kol adam mechonein b'koyach machshava yotzeres. Not everyone has been gifted, mechunan, has been given a gift from God with the ability of creative thought. Oh, b'koyach hislatus haregesh, or with passionate feelings. Not all of us have the ability to do certain things. That's not all of our tasks. What is the koach yotzer shehu nachlos kol echad v'echad? What is the within the domain of each and every one of us? Hu ha hisbonus. That's the idea of being able to be hisbonus. That's the ability to contemplate, to be aware, to become familiar with what it is that we're doing and with our surroundings. Ein lecho adam shlo yuchol lahagia lehisrachsus. There's no person who is not able to come to a person of. I think I would translate as some sort of passionate understanding of what's going on around him. If he has a menucha senefa, he's able to be in a relaxed atmosphere, b'matzavo hanafshi, in which his soul, his being is in a certain place, in which there is calm and serenity surrounding him. His bonus kazos yeshba mishum yitziras mamash. And if you're able to do that, to accomplish that, you can literally create. You can recreate yourself. A person can make himself anew with his ability to be mizmainim. And he writes, since we are very far from this concept, let me be ma'arach. Let me expand a little bit on what it is that I'm trying to introduce. Let's go to the second paragraph. Quote the Targum Yerushalmi, the end of Parshas Kisavo. So the Torah says as follows. This is a pasuk. Ushmartim es divrei abris hazos. You shall guard or safe keep the words of this bris. Va'asisa mosam, and you shall do it. You shall fulfill it. So far, Torah, what the phrase would be translated as guard it, keep it, and do it. Why? So the Torah says, "Lema'an taskilu es kol asher ta'asun." In order that you should taskilu, leave that word untranslated for a moment, all that you will accomplish. Now, what does the word taskilu mean? What's the root of that word taskilu? Seichel. So one possible translation would have been, why should you guard the words of my covenant and why should you do it? In order that you should sort of understand or with your seichel be aware of that which you are doing. So the Targum Yerushalmi translates this as follows into Aramaic. First phrase, v'tim v'sitroin yasmili shvacho raisa, guard these words of the Torah, usa avdun yason, and keep it. And now the phrase, v'man taskilu, biglal ditisboinen yasmashet ditasavun. You should be misboinen, that you should contemplate. You should pay attention to all that you should do. That according to the Targum Yerushalmi, according to the, what's the Torah saying? Why should you keep all my safeguards? Why should you keep all of my laws and do them? In order that you should achieve a place in life where you contemplate everything you do before you do it. Haritach was koyla Torah kula. The purpose, he says, Torah saying, of all of Torah, his boninus b'chol hamasim. All your actions should be done with his boninus. Nothing is on autopilot. Everything in my life is important enough that it should be thought out and paid attention to before I do it. Tachlis Torah, the purpose of the Torah, lahafuch es ha'adam, to entirely change a person, his ma'asim, his actions, his behaviors, to be a kulo misbonin, that everything that he does is with thought. That's the level of concentration, it's the level of being aware, and it doesn't necessarily mean that we're doing things radically different than we're doing now, which means we're not doing them on autopilot. And if you think about it, this is one of the great struggles that we have in life, is not doing things on autopilot. I mean, I hear this complaint from people all the time. I feel like I'm just going through the motions. That's what's not, that's what we do. It's just like driving. Driving is a classic, great example for life. We struggle with something. It's exciting at first. How exciting is it to drive? It was awesome. Right? It's like scary success. I mean, you're how alive are you when you're driving? You're very alive because you are so aware of the fact that you're driving a very powerful machine and you're learning and you're there and all the stuff that goes into it. And then you get good at it, you get used to it, and it slides into autopilot. And it becomes meaningless. So all it says it over the Torah is telling you, life is like that. At first, you know, anyone who's experienced going from a non-observant to an observant lifestyle experiences that. It's that same, wow, everything is new, everything is fresh, everything is exciting, everything is important, and it's this, and it's scary, and it's amazing, and it's all that. And then you get good at it. Now I get it. And it's no longer that sense of whatever. And then just like we cruise into autopilot. And that is where the task of life is. And no, kula mizvone, constantly working, what separates the greats from those who just cruise and are uninspired is the ability to achieve this. Now we're going to talk a lot, this will be the first major study that we'll do, is this concept. What does that mean to be mizvone? Let's just introduce the concept of not living on autopilot.
It's hard. It's hard sometimes coming from a non-one background because what are you contemplating? I put on the phone in the morning, I can try to contemplate the awesomeness of God, let's say, but without knowing a lot about what I'm actually doing with the film or the spiritual side of what's going on, it's hard to have something to contemplate about.
Excellent. Yeah, 100%. That's why most of us don't do it. Yeah. Well, we'll get into that. When we do the longer study on, as we get into it, this is really just an introduction to this. Well, that's something we need to work on. Just becoming aware. And this is, I'm acknowledging and not answering your question other than, yeah. Then we'll get there.
So this sentence, Tachlis kol haTorah kula, is going in before Hashem. That means the purpose of the Torah is basically to be mindful of what you're doing?
Yes. That's what he's claiming. That's a powerful statement, which he's saying the Torah itself makes.
The whole Torah is what he's saying, right?
Yeah, that's the man taskilu, keep my words. Look this up in Parshas Kisavo. Keep my words. Shmartim es divrei abris. Do it. Leman taskilu. Targum Yerushalmi, which is a early translation. was in order that you become a person who's nisbonin, and you become a person who's not living on autopilot, a person who's becoming aware of the things that we're doing and attributing meaning to them. Third paragraph. Kan hinenu omdin ba'avoda hachashuva b'yoyser. We have now come to the point of the most important aspect of our avoda, v'chaye toira uv'chaye adam. Stressing what you just said, saying, I didn't just say something unimportant, I just said something major. We have now just reached the central point of avoda in the life of a person involved in the life of Torah. V'chein aleinu l'harcha, we need to keep explaining it. I can't just say that in Duvan. This needs explanation, because this is pretty important. The hisboininess, this concept of contemplation, so gadol hu misodos haTorah, is the foundation and the underlying, literally it's sometimes like a secret, but the underlying principle of all the principles of the Torah. Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, writes as follows. This is a quote. Zetira, ki shneim betchuna achas nivro. Two things were created together, seichel ha'adam, the ability of man to think and to reason, and the Torah, which then develops man's ability to think and reason. Those two concepts. You have the ability of man to reason and the Torah thought itself. HaTorah or, and Torah is light. Mamish, literal, it's a light and lightning concept. It's not just knowledge or wisdom. And Ramchal writes, we find often that the Torah is compared to fire. Each word is like a coal of fire. Why is the Torah, in the words of the sages, often compared to a fire? So Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato writes, because if you leave a coal the way that it is, you'll just see coals, you won't see any flame, you won't see any heat, you'll just see a blackened coal, not knowing what it is. But if you start moving it around and you start blowing on it and you start playing with it, as to slide, all of a sudden that coal bursts into a flame. That is the parable that the Torah has for the seichel of man, man's intellect, his ability to contemplate. If you leave it alone, you'll see it and you'll say, I don't know, that's what I see. I'm an intelligent person, there's nothing there. He has ability to achieve, ability to think, ability to understand insights. But if a person is trained in this idea of contemplation, that's when, if he wants it to become a bursting flame, then he's got to stoke that coal with that koyach of his bodiness, and it's his responsibility. Right, the mind is a terrible thing to waste. That's not an original thought, as I said hundreds of years ago. Just let it sit there. You got to stoke the flame to bring it out. Why? Why was the seichel created in a way that a human being can live his entire life and never really soak that coal into a flame? He could have the seichel, and he could use the seichel, he could use intellect for all sorts of good purposes, but it could never become this passionate living, not living on autopilot kind of lifestyle. Why is that? So he writes in the second paragraph, because if the idea rechov of Imenas Alev Bnei Adam, if we would be born naturally with that understanding of things, a person would never sin. Not only would you never sin, you would never even desire anything else. You would be so impassioned in what it is that you understood and believed in. In order that, since Hashem desired man to be endowed with free will, that it could be just as easy for him to be defeated as it is for him to defeat his Yetzer. He gave us the tools that we needed, but he closed it like a coal. The Shetuchol is Pashen Kishon. He said, it's there. You have everything that you need. It's within you. But you have to bring it out. It's your choice. You can stoke it, or you could leave it. I've given you what you needed. I gave you all a hot coal. As if he sent you out into a forest with your Boy Scouts troop, and he gave you a burning hot coal, and said, you have what you need for a fire. If you don't know how to use it, and you don't make use of it, you can extinguish and you'll be left with nothing. But I'm not giving you a fire. I'm not giving you everything you need. I'm giving you the tools, the raw material that you need, and you need to then stoke it and break it out into the flame, the fire that it's possible to be. Those are the words of the Ramchal, that in order to provide for Bechira, to endow us with the strength and tools that we need, but to not give us the tools in a way that it's already formed so much so that there's no choice left, so he gave it to us in a way that it needs to be developed and fanned out. The idea of needing to use this tool called Hizboninus as part of the foundations of the creation. This is the derech, this is the only way which will bring to Hafa'olas HaSeichel, to where the intellect can really truly accomplish what it needs to. And the more that a person's seichel functions and is strengthened in a person, the more his ability to conquer his Yetzirah, because he's now using that ability that has been God endowed within him. Okay, let's pause here for a second. With this concept, I want to develop then what we're going to need to then work on for this coming week. So these two ideas that he introduces here at this point, which is going to be our starting point, is going to be A, the idea that there needs to be a set time for Musar. Now, eventually what I'd like to be doing is we'll have a Musar Sefer that we could actually be learning during that time. But what I'd like to start before that is actually combine these two ideas into one. Have a specific time of his goininus. That's a specific time every day. So what I'd like to introduce is as follows. The concept is difficult to explain this. Like, what am I supposed to think about? What am I supposed to be working on? It's a very difficult concept. There is that what I have found in my own experience is a very simple way of introducing myself to the concept, and I would like to do it with you as well. I think it will require about 10 minutes a day. So, first thing to do is everyone needs to accept upon themselves and publicly share when those 10 minutes are going to be, that you're willing to designate 10 minutes a day that you're going to do. I don't care if it's early in the morning, middle of the afternoon, late at night, it doesn't matter. It has to be 10 minutes where you get 10 minutes of time to yourself.
You want the same time every day? Or just
same time every day. Otherwise it doesn't happen. There needs to be a time where you can say, this is when I'm going to do it. It could be before I go to bed, but I won't go to bed until it happens, or a specific time of the day. But there has to be a time in which you're gonna do it.
Mine's gonna be 10:00. 10:30. It's really here to 10:15. On some nights. Especially at Walmart, 9:45 to 10:05 or something like
that. That's true. Okay. Yeah, that works.
Probably
at 6 p.m. when I get off work. I'm going to do 10:15 also. To Dollar James. When I was good, I always did it after Meyer, but I don't dive in Meyer at the same time. So I would like to go to 10:15. I think I'm going to have to try. I'm going to try to do it also. We'll call it 10:00. So if I'm here for the 9:45 mile, we'll do it again. I'm going to try for the 10:00 clock. So the task is as follows. You are all responsible for getting a notebook. You may already have one. It's fine. It doesn't have to be a full page notebook. It could be one of the smaller ones, whatever you like. And what you're basically going to be keeping is a mini diary. You ever kept a diary before?
Only on trips.
Yeah, same here.
Only when I travel.
So this is a new type of diary. This is a cheshbon nefesh. This is a reckoning of sorts. And what you're going to be doing is a specific task for the 10 minutes. It takes a little bit less time, it's fine also. But in which, especially it's good for those you're doing it later at night, 6:00 is also late enough. in which you're basically just going to record your day. And no one's ever going to read it other than yourself. It's good to reread it every once in a while, but it's yours, so you don't need to write it should be legible, but you could reread it. It doesn't have to be full sentences, it could be, you know, whatever works. But it's a matter in which you get into the habit of recording, sitting at the end of the day, just going over what happened. 10 o'clock, so let's say you'll have, you start fresh and morning. Wake up. How did I wake up? How did wake up go? First thing on my mind, I'm like, all right, I snoozed it 3 times, I meant to do it twice, so I was 5 minutes later waking up than I had wanted to. But I dived in with my tefillin this morning. I did it, yes, no, nothing was pretty pathetic. Great, I thought it was pretty good, and I wasn't concentrating the whole time. You sort of rate yourself, and again, you're not actually writing it to me that I'm reading it, where you need to like spell out, because in your mind, you can sum up how you davened. You know, it would take you 15 lines to write out, but you went through the process in your mind, and you could write, it was so-so. And you yourself know what that means when you write the word so-so. Davening, wake up was poor, davening was so-so. That might have actually taken a whole 30 minutes of your morning when you actually went through and you paid attention. Yeah, oh, it was all right. And then you'll find the patterns of your day, whether or not you're struggling with remembering to make brachas before, remembering to make brachas afterwards, how was I at work, how was I in school, what did I say? And you'll go through the exercise of, that conversation was horrible, I really shouldn't have said that, I really shouldn't have been involved in that, I did such a nice thing today. And it should not be all critical, it should be, I really did this wonderful thing for my wife today, I did this thing for my roommate, I helped out in school, and it should just be a process of going to take out 10 minutes, and I'm going to just recall, sort of rate myself on how I did today. Where things could be better, where things could be good. I'm enjoying this exercise, I'm not enjoying this exercise, whatever it may be. But what this will cause, this is going to be a training ground, and it's a critical training ground for this concept of hezbonus, because all of a sudden you will see, when you sit down at 10 o'clock, you'll start paying, I didn't really notice that before. You'll start noticing things. It takes a couple of days, if not weeks, where you'll begin noticing them after the fact. Eventually you'll start noticing them as they're happening. That which never happened before, but you're going to start because you're now responsible. You have the time where you're going to sit down, you're going to write, and again, you will not do this well if you think that anyone's going to read it. It should not be read by your spouses, by your roommates. I'm not going to read it. I'm not interested. It's an exercise for you to be brutally honest with yourself as to just what happened. Some days you'll see you'll write 3 lines, nothing really happened, it's a so-so day, everything was fine. Some days you don't have enough time to write the things you want to write about. It's more important to the mental cognition. If you don't sit down and write, you'll never go through the mental thing. So you need to commit at least 10 minutes a night to write. If you don't fill in 10 minutes, it's one thing, but you must commit 10 minutes a night to writing. Every day you just date it, 2-23-09. Today is my first assignment, I'm going to write. I can't remember, I wasn't paying attention today, so we'll see how things go. And you could write over something, an insight you learned. I learned this from somebody today, I saw an amazing thing. It'd be about things, it doesn't be about yourself. Sometimes you should be writing, I saw such an amazing thing. The guy who I was working with did this, this, and this, and I thought, oh, that was such an amazing thing that he did. It's a matter of learning to pay attention to what's going on around you, not necessarily that it's only about the things you did right or wrong, just it's a ground, a training ground to see that.
Better maybe do it later in the day then.
That's why I happen to think it's better later in the day. If 6 o'clock works for you, timing wise, then it should just be that every day's entry starts at supper time.
So instead of writing from what happened after 6 o'clock.
After you wrote the previous day, supper time with my family and my wife went like this, nighttime at home, my studies, whatever. I went to sleep on time, not on time. You just shift
You know, before I go to bed instead, then I
should this
like
be it. Adjacent to the Moser 10 minutes as well?
This is it.
Oh, it doesn't. Okay.
This is it. In other words, before we'll get into eventually learning something out of a book, but this is just first thing we're working on is this idea of his blindness of being able to pay attention to the world around us. This is I'm excited to do this again myself. It's been a long time since I did this. I'll testify on myself. I never experienced the kind of awareness and just growth as a person. I did this once for a good chunk of time, a couple months consecutively. There was nothing like it. I mean, in my height, I was aware of like everything that I was doing over the course of the day. I didn't necessarily stop myself from doing things I didn't want to do. That's an even higher level. But I was just, as it was going on, it was the exact opposite of an autopilot. It was an amazing experience. It's so hard to do. I haven't been able to do it consistently. That's why you need to have a time. There has to be a specific time. This time comes. Now is my Moser Seder. This is my Moser Seder. I have to have a Moser. How can I grow as a person without a Moser Seder? Rambam writes in Mefurish. Rambam writes, if you want to be an Adam HaSholem, you must work on it. Yom. It must be a daily time, and if it's not a set daily time, it's not going to happen. So this is my time. 10 o'clock, setting aside 10 minutes, go off into a room. I have my little notebook. It's just for me to read, nobody else. We'll go through then, a week from now, we'll go through how the experience was. You want to share a couple of things. You'll see how many things you have to share. You'll be amazed.
So we should be focusing on things that we're either doing well at or things that we're lacking, like during the day?
Yeah, my advice is as we begin, just sort of like being a recording secretary. Just go through the mental exercise of going through your day.
So just everything. Like
yeah, so you want to condense it. You don't want to spend 5 hours writing it.
Right.
Condense it
to
10 minutes. Mm-hmm. But you'll see as you get into the habit, you'll develop your own little patterns of things. But just it's a great way of starting in the sense of, okay, how did I wake up? How did I daven? How was I at work today? Was I agitated? And you could just write, I was so agitated today. That's great. Just being able to say at the end of the day to yourself, gosh, was I in a bad mood all day today? I made such a nasty comment to my coworker, to my partner, to my wife, whatever. And just being able to note that. Just being able to note it, you'll see. As we go on, we'll get more refined as to, it will become less important for you to write, I had, tuna fish and crackers for lunch. And it'll become more important as to, I ate like a mensch or I was in a rush. But as a beginning exercise, just start noting your day. And then you'll see the fine nuances of that same day. All of a sudden, you start working on how pleasant when I picked up the phone. How did I eat my lunch? There's no end. That question of, rather, what do you work on? Is a ludicrous question. I mean, what do I work on? I work on becoming an Adam HaSholem. It's like there's no end to that. But this is going to make us aware of that. That's this concept of this bonus of not living on autopilot. So the first thing that you're all responsible for doing is on the way out of here, if you don't already have a notebook that you're planning on using, if you don't go to Kroger now, after Marv, on your way home, and buy one, then you're not going to write tonight because you don't have your notebook. So your first activity is after Marv, unless you already have one at home that you know you're going to use, go to Kroger or Publix, whichever one you prefer. Buy yourself whatever size. I prefer the ones that are a little bit smaller than this. They make those mini notebooks, kind of not like tiny, but mid-sized.
Black and white ones.
Whatever works, whatever you feel comfortable with. And then tonight you write your first entry. Tonight should be a small entry because half of your muscle state is going to be taken up getting yourself to Kroger. Sit down, 5 minutes. Tonight I'm starting my project. I just want to write one thing just to make sure that I got started, and tomorrow night I'll be able to do it more.
Does it matter do you have to get a notebook and then just do it on my computer?
I am sort of giving you the old-fashioned way. If you guys are better on computer,
I don't know
certain things I like writing.
I've done both. I don't know that I can actually read my own.
Having done both, I think writing is more personal. You'll do better exercise to write it.
I personally find that I just like writing. There's something about getting in. This is about self-contemplation more than anything else. If you find the act of writing too tedious,
I feel like writing to me gets
gets me to the point where like I'd rather just stop because I don't like it. Like I can type forever.
If I have no problem with that. It makes no difference to me. I came from only like for me it works better for writing. If it works better for you typing, gig is insane. I don't like when one thing's on print, like who knows why. I like I'm writing gossip, but in fact it's legible, no one else can read it but me if I feel more I feel safer. I write in code that even if somebody were to find it, they really would have a hard time knowing what I'm talking about. I would write whole stories about things that I did that day without mentioning the person. I would just say, you know, when so and so came over and said or really, I would write in code, basically, because the point was to be able to write, but I felt more comfortable being honest with myself, knowing that I wasn't afraid that this was going to be buried in my basement, and like 10 years later, one of my kids is going to, you know, just be digging up an urn. And they're not going to understand what it says. So I could do it better on computers. I don't know. I feel like more formal writing in computer. I have to write full sentences. If that works for you, do whatever you want. That doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter to me. Okay, so tomorrow I'm going to check in with everybody to make sure that you have all not only gotten your materials, but that you actually sat down and started. Okay, that's our introduction. We'll talk more next week. Baruch Hashem.